Hello, my name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and I'm going to be talking to you on this podcast about two UK accounting standards on fixed assets. Those two standards are FRS 15 on tangible fixed assets and FRS 10 on goodwill and intangible fixed assets. You might also like to know that there's a further podcast on FRS 11 impairments, and you might like to have a listen to that once you've listened to this podcast, of course. So first of all, FRS 15 on tangible fixed assets. FRS 15 is split into three sections. First of all, costs. What costs can you capitalise in respect of your tangible fixed assets? Secondly, revaluations. How and when can you revalue fixed assets? And thirdly, the depreciation of fixed assets. So let's start with the first one then, costs. What costs can you capitalise? Well, this is split into three sections. First of all, what initial costs can you capitalise? What initial costs can you capitalise? And the rule here is that you can capitalise any costs that are directly attributable to bringing the asset to its present location and condition. So the purchase price, of course, can be capitalised. Also, the transport costs can be capitalised, the costs of bringing it to its present location. And thirdly, in this section, any costs of, let's say, commissioning the asset, so making the asset fit for use. Let's say we had a bus, for example, that we'd purchased from one country and we were going to use in the UK, and we might have to change some of the specifications on the bus to make it usable under UK legislation. The second group of costs would be finance costs. Now, that's an interesting one. An example of that would be, let's say we were having a new head office building built for us. And let's say that head office building was taking 1 year to be constructed. Now, during that 1 year period, we're going to be spending money paying our contractors. We're going to be paying for building materials. And what we're also going to be paying for is the capital that's tied up in that project. In other words, we may have to borrow money to finance that project, or we may have to use our existing resources to finance the project. So we're allowed to capitalise the interest cost of running that project. And it doesn't matter whether we've actually borrowed money on a specific loan or if we're using our existing resources, we can capitalise that interest cost. And the way we do it is we debit the fixed asset and we'd credit the interest expense in the profit and loss account. The third set of costs include three subcategories, and that is any subsequent costs that we incur. And the first subcategory of that is if we have a cost that enhances the economic benefit of the fixed asset. What might that mean? Well, again, I'm going to use the example of a building. Let's say we had a building and we decided to build an extension on it. That extension might allow us more office space, it might allow us more retail space, it might allow us more storage space. It will enhance the benefit that we get from that building. The second subsection is where the subsequent cost is a separate component. So let's say that, again, I'll use the example of a building. When we buy the building includes an air conditioning system. Now, if when we purchased the building, we decided to depreciate the building itself over, let's say, 50 years, and the air conditioning system over, let's say, 10 years, when we get to the end of the first 10 years, that air conditioning system will have been fully depreciated and may, of course, also therefore need replacing. So after 10 years, when we replace the air conditioning system, we are adding a separate component to the building, and the cost of that new replacement air conditioning system can be capitalised and then depreciated over, let's say, another 10 years. The problem arises there, though, if we haven't separately depreciated the air conditioning system in the first instance. In that case, then we would not be allowed to capitalise the subsequent expenditure. So we can only capitalise that subsequent expenditure if it is a separate component and if it's also been fully depreciated to date. The third subsection would be where we've got a major inspection or overhaul. The example I'll use here is, let's say we have a train, and let's say the train is being depreciated over 30 years. And let's say that 30-year period is now finished, but the train is still usable for at least another decade. At that time, let's say that we rip out all of the carriages and the engine and completely refurbish them, and we replace the engine with a new one. That major inspection or overhaul has allowed the carriages themselves to be used, let's say, for another 10 years. And in that instance, we can then capitalise the cost of that subsequent inspection and overhaul that we've carried out. So the second section of tangible fixed assets I want to look at is revaluations. Now, three things about revaluations. First of all, the frequency of revaluation. I've got to say at this point, there is absolutely no requirement for any business to revalue any of its assets. This is something that a business will do voluntarily. However, if you do a revaluation, then you must carry on revaluing with another full valuation in 5 years' time. You've also got to do an interim valuation at year three, and you also need to do valuations whenever you become aware that there have been large changes in the value of the asset that has been initially revalued. The second subsection here are the bases for revaluation that you carry out. And there are three types of property we've got here. First of all, where you've got a specialised property, you use what's called the depreciated replacement cost. Specialised property would be something like, let's say, a hospital, which has one specialised use. And we would therefore use the depreciated replacement cost of another hospital on which to base our revaluation. Second type of property would be a non-specialised property. Now, most properties will fall into this category. So we might have an office building, let's say, that has a variety of different uses, and we would use what's called the existing use value in order to carry out our revaluation. So let's say that the office building was being used as a training facility, then we would base our revaluation looking at other offices that were being used as training facilities. We may have properties also that are surplus to our requirements, in other words, properties that we're about to sell, and they would be valued at their market value. Okay, the third subsection under revaluations is the gain. What happens to the gain? Where does it go? Well, the gain goes to a revaluation reserve. So the double entry is debit that fixed asset and credit the revaluation reserve. The last section under FRS 15 tangible fixed assets is depreciation. And the rule here is that all fixed assets have to be depreciated with the following exceptions. You don't need to depreciate land. And secondly, you don't need to depreciate where the level of depreciation is immaterial. Even if you've revalued a fixed asset, that fixed asset must still be depreciated. And when you do the depreciation of a revalued fixed asset, you'll base the depreciation on the revalued amount. Okay, that's FRS 15. Three sections. First of all, what can we capitalize? Secondly, how do we revalue? And thirdly, what are the rules on depreciation? And we're now going to move on and have a look at FRS 10, which is on goodwill and intangible fixed assets. Goodwill is mentioned separately because the rules on goodwill are slightly different to the rules on other intangible fixed assets. So goodwill recognition, first of all. When can we recognise goodwill? Well, we can never recognise internally generated goodwill. So a business can never recognise its own goodwill on its own balance sheet. That is not acceptable. When can goodwill be recognised? Well, it can be recognised when one entity buys another entity. So if one company purchases another company, then the goodwill that it's paid for on that purchase, that goodwill being the difference between the purchase price and the fair value of the separable net assets of the purchased company, that goodwill can be recognised, and it can be recognised in the group accounts of the purchasing company. What about the recognition of intangibles then? There are three situations where intangibles can be recognised. First of all, when the intangibles are purchased separately. So if you buy an intangible from another party, let's say you bought, for example, a franchise right from another party, then the value of that franchise right, that legal right, can be recognised on your balance sheet. Secondly, if you bought the intangible as part of a business combination. So let's say that you bought another company and that other company had a license, say, to operate an airline route. The value of that license could be recognised as an intangible in the purchasing company's balance sheet. And thirdly, we can recognise other intangibles where they are internally generated. Now, this is subject to specific rules. Those other intangibles can only be recognised if there is a readily ascertainable market value. A readily ascertainable market value means that the asset, first of all, belongs to a homogenous population, and secondly, an active market must exist. So what do those two things mean? Well, a homogenous population means that there are other intangibles of that type around in the marketplace. And secondly, an active market existing means that people are regularly buying and selling that type of asset. Again, I could use the example of a franchise right there. Franchise rights are often sold. There is a homogenous population of franchise rights. Different franchises are also bought and sold from time to time. So, if you've created your own franchise, then that franchise clearly belongs to a homogenous population of things like franchises, and there's an active market that exists to buy and sell franchises, then potentially you could capitalise the value of those franchise rights in your own balance sheet. Intangibles may need to be amortised. If the intangible has an indefinite useful life, i.e. it could potentially last forever, then we don't need to amortise it. However, on the downside, we do need to annually review it for impairment. If the intangible has a finite useful life, then we need to amortise it over the useful life on a systematic basis. There's a rebuttable presumption here that that life will be less than 20 years. In unusual circumstances, you can go above that, but normally we would amortise the intangible over a maximum of 20 years. Can you revalue intangibles? Well, yes, you can, except you can't revalue goodwill. Never revalue goodwill. Other intangibles can be revalued if they've got a readily ascertainable market value. A readily ascertainable market value means there's a homogenous population, first of all, and there's an active market. Those are the same rules that we heard before, the rules relating to when you can capitalise an internally generated intangible. Okay, so that's intangibles. Remember, intangibles have slightly different rules to goodwill. The key things with goodwill are that goodwill can't be revalued and internally generated goodwill cannot be shown on a business's balance sheet. Whereas with other intangibles, they can be revalued and you can, under certain circumstances, show internally generated intangibles on your own balance sheet. Okay, that's the end of my short presentation on fixed assets, FRS 15 tangibles and FRS 10 intangibles. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.